Have you ever wondered why people who are opposed to one or more forms of oppression, such as racism or sexism, often stay mired in others? Why people who are working toward social justice sometimes engage in interpersonal dynamics that are unjust? Or why those who value freedom and democracy nevertheless vote against those particular values? Psychologist Melanie Joy asks those questions and looks to answer them in her new book, Powerarchy: Understanding the Psychology of Oppression for Social Transformation. And it's a pleasure to welcome Melanie Joy to the roundtable this morning. Melanie, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
So give us a sense of what powerarchy is.
Powerarchy is the belief system that conditions us to see certain individuals or groups as more worthy of moral consideration. That means of being treated with integrity or respect than others. And the system causes us to act in ways that are relationally dysfunctional. What that means is it causes us to act in ways that violate our integrity so that we don't practice our core moral values of compassion and justice toward others, and therefore harm the dignity of others. And this leads to us feeling disconnected from one another. So a way to really understand what I'm talking about with powerarchy is to actually think about your experience of it in your own life. So if you, for example, think of a relationship in your life that you would consider a great relationship, chances are when you think of your experience of connection in that relationship, you do feel connected with the other person, the other individual. And chances are you also feel like they honor your dignity, meaning they perceive and treat you as though you're a fundamentally worthy being. You're not less than they or others are. And they probably treat you with integrity, meaning they treat you with the way that they would want to be treated if they were in your position. So probably it's easier for you to feel empowered to be your better self in that relationship. And then if you think about a relationship that's a lousy relationship, maybe it's a relationship that's ended or, you know, just with somebody you've met online, like an online troll, chances are you have the opposite experience. Rather than feeling connected with them, you feel disconnected. Rather than feeling they honor your integrity or your dignity, you feel like they treat you as less than. And they don't practice integrity toward you. And you probably struggle to be your better self in this relationship. You might even struggle to like who you are in the relationship. So each of these relationships falls on a different side of the relational spectrum. One reflects a powerarchy, a dysfunctional relational system, and the other reflects a healthy relationship.
One of the things that you point out in the book, which I think is fascinating, is that not only the oppressed, but also the power holders can bring about this change. It doesn't have to just be one or the other.
That's right. All of us, in fact, I would say power holders have even more responsibility to do this. All of us can interrupt the process of dysfunctional relating at any point in time. You know, in any relationship or even any interaction we're having, we always have the opportunity to interrupt it if the process is dysfunctional, relationally dysfunctional or powerarchical. So, and when I'm talking about powerarchy, I'm talking about a system. But a system can be as small as two people, right? Like a relationship, or it can be as small as a workplace, a work culture, or it can be as large as a social system. So powerarchies can be, for example, systems such as racism, sexism, and speciesism, or they can be, for instance, abusive relationships. And powerarchy, this mentality of powerarchy, also informs or drives the way that we relate to other humans. Non-humans, I should say, animals, and also to the environment.
I assume that this is probably considered that we know this, but the oppression that we are talking about here is the allocation and the use, the abuse of that power. That is what you're fighting against.
Yeah, that's right. So all oppressive systems, when we look at all systems of oppression, like racism and sexism and speciesism and so forth, and abusive systems, like an abusive relationship, we can see that these systems all have the same basic makeup. And you're right, they all reflect an unjust allocation and use of power. It's an abuse of power. And so really, all of these systems also are informed by, or they stem from, the very same mentality. The same mentality that drives us to abuse or oppress humans, drives us to abuse or oppress non-humans, or our domestic partner, and so forth. And this is what I refer to as the powerarchical mentality. This is the mentality of oppression. And it's organized around a core belief, a belief in a hierarchy of moral worth. That means a belief that certain individuals or groups are worthy, more worthy of being treated with respect than others. And so when we talk about oppression and abuse, it's really not enough to just look at who is oppressing whom. And that matters, of course. But we also need to look at how and why we oppress, at the deeper mentality that drives this dysfunctional way of relating, or we're just going to trade one form of oppression as another, for another as we work towards social transformation, and we're at risk of becoming the very thing we're working to transform.
You talk in the book about privilege and the fact that the more privilege that we have, the less we recognize it. How do we see that rear its ugly head in this powerarchy?
Well, I mean, we can look at economic privilege as an example. The more economic privilege we have, and the more we live in our insular bubble of people who share the same economic privilege that we have, the more normal this way of life becomes, and the more it seems like just the way things are and the way things are meant to be.
Melanie Joy, we've been talking about powerarchy, understanding the psychology of oppression for social transformation. When it comes to that psychology aspect, I guess, you end the book with a chapter on beyond oppression. So how do we get to that point, and what are the challenges of making sure we don't revert back?
Well, I think, you know, because the problem is relational, the solution needs to be relational. And so I think one of the key things that we can do is to develop relational literacy. Relational literacy is the understanding of and ability to practice healthy ways of relating. So if you think about it, if our collective level of relational literacy weren't so low, if we weren't still living in basically the relational dark ages, we'd probably be much better positioned to make the kinds of healthful choices that are essential for a functional democracy. So relational literacy, I feel so strongly, actually, about this practice for social transformation and personal transformation. I've written a book on it that's going to come out in February called Getting Relationships Right. And, you know, one key thing that we can do just to start is to really make a habit of pausing in our interactions and just, you know, asking ourselves, really pausing, becoming more mindful and more intentional, and asking ourselves, does this interaction reflect integrity? Am I treating this other individual the way that I would want to be treated? And vice versa, am I being treated in a way that reflects integrity? And, you know, notice within ourselves whether we're feeling contempt, which is when we've placed ourselves in the feeling we have when we've placed ourselves in a position of moral superiority, or we're feeling shame, which is when we're the feeling we have when we're perceiving ourselves in a position of moral inferiority. And so really starting to pay attention inside and notice, and of course the notice how we're feeling. And of course the antidote to both these emotions is empathy. So really recognizing that every interaction is an opportunity to interrupt a pattern of dysfunction and replace it with a pattern of healthy ways of relating, to shift the trajectory of how we relate. I mean, of course, you know, I'm not saying that change is going to happen just because each one of us becomes more relational. We obviously need to challenge structural power imbalances and work to change legislation and so forth. But we also need to do this, you know, with a commitment to cultivating healthier relationality within ourselves as well as on the broader social scale.
You just mentioned empathy, and you write about that in that final chapter. You say, imagine that the person with or about whom you're communicating is reading what you write or hearing what you say, and frame your message so that it honors their dignity, even as you point out the problems their privilege causes. That empathy is so important and yet so often overlooked.
Yes, it's so important and absolutely so often overlooked. And often this is just because we haven't developed the habit of being more mindful, of being more intentional, of pausing and stepping back. And just really, this can be a transformative practice, you know, pausing and stepping back and really imagining for a moment what the person on the other end of our communication is going to think when they read or hear our communication.
Melanie Joy is the author of the new book, Powerarchy: Understanding the Psychology of Oppression for Social Transformation. Melanie Joy, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. And listeners can get more information by going to powerarchy.org. Thank you, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.